Good evening, this is Mae Breslin, Carmel, California. This is tape number 356, side 1, September 29th, 1978. For the next 2 or 3 weeks, possibly 4, I will be discussing the House Select Committee on Assassinations on these tapes with you, and hopefully you will make copies of these tapes and send them to various members of the committee. I don't have the money to spare for extra copies, but if you are so inclined and want to send letters to them and transcribe some of the things I've said and write to them and write to the Justice Department to demand an investigation of this House Select Committee, I would appreciate that. And I think that you can also take advantage of talk shows on the radio. I hear Bob Trevor various times on the evening in KGO here in California. He reaches all the western states, about 30 states, and sometimes he'll say the board is empty, there's no calls. Why aren't people calling in? And, of course, I am on that station a lot with Bob, but you could still utilize across the country in New York and Washington and Pennsylvania. I know wherever these tapes are going, there are talk shows in those cities, and I don't think you people are using this enough to call in and express your anger and outrage. And I'm going to run down the things that I have observed about the House Select Committee through their 17 days of open hearings and testimony. And you'll get these tapes, and I hope that you use them and don't just sit on them, because the purpose of doing this work is to expose these people and then to do something about it. Just before I get into the tapes, I do want to tell you I got a copy of the new People's Almanac. I don't know how many of you ever read the first People's Almanac put out by David Walshinsky and Irving Wallace. That's Wallace's son. It was on the bestseller list for over a year, and it's in paperback. It's a fantastic book. I love the first one, and they asked me to do a section for the second People's Almanac, which I might have mentioned on my tapes this last year that I was working on. It's called The Last Words of Lee Harvey Oswald, and they just, pardon me, got something in my throat. They just sent me an autographed copy of the New People's Almanac number 2, and I've got 6 pages in there. The Last Words of Oswald, compiled by Mae Breslin. And the introduction goes on to say that everybody has talked about Lee Harvey Oswald except himself, and that the editors of People's Almanac wanted me to compile what Lee Harvey Oswald said from the time that he was arrested until he was killed. He was kept in the custody of the Dallas Police Department. There were no tape recordings there or secretaries to transcribe what he said. So the information that I got and compiled in chronological order was taken from him in front of newsmen, in front of various policemen, his wife, what his brother said, what his mother said, what the people said who arrested him that were in the car taking him to the Dallas jail, persons who testified before the Warren Commission who heard Oswald in the corridors and at the press conference, and compiling it in chronological order. I think you'll find it really interesting, and I'm very excited about it because it tells its own story, and this is important to keep the history straight about what Lee Harvey Oswald said about himself, and then compare it to the evidence that's come out since and see if the House Select Committee even examined the allegations that he said or went into them, which they didn't, which is negligence because he was alive and made these claims, and they should have gone into these matters. That is the People's Almanac, volume number 2. I guess it's on the stands now, or should be, and it's put out by Bantam Books. It's a paperbound, and it's $9.95. I've given you on this sheet that accompanies the tape the names of the persons who carried the radio conversation in between the House Select hearing committees. I think they are very important, and to transcribe the exact hearings or to get the verbatim testimony when it comes out from the government printing office isn't enough, because Nina Totenberg and Joe Volsch introduced in the morning who the witnesses were. They came on after the hearings and gave their interpretation of what was said. They came on before the next witnesses after the lunch break and reiterated what they thought took place, and then they summarized in the evening what transpired in the room. And they were abysmal failures, and I think that Joe Volsch was just absolutely impossibly determined to show that Oswald was involved in some kind of a conspiracy, or Fidel Castro was. And they were uneducated into any of the circumstances of the assassinations. They had a printed sheet out that the House Select Committee gave them to read on the air of the press coverage, and that's what they read, and didn't do any homework on their own. And I have their addresses if you want to write and complain, because they'll be on again during the Martin Luther King hearings in November. And I think you just might as well tell them what kind of asses they are, that they're total fools and asses, and listen yourself to what they say. And if you don't get these programs in your own hometowns, I'm sorry, this isn't going on national television like they promised, and many people aren't getting these hearings. So the summary I give you will be my view of what transpired until you can buy the actual volumes of testimony yourself. They even hinted that they may lock up this report. The House of Representatives, headed by Representative Pike, did an investigation into domestic intelligence activities. That's the one that Daniel Shore leaked to Rolling Stones. And the entire report, if you don't take the Rolling Stones, is locked up and has not been available. Very important links of the beginning of the Central Intelligence Agency to the Dewey campaign in New York and the beginning of organized crime in those agencies, but that is locked up, and they hinted that even this may be locked up. If we don't make a fuss about the House Select Committee and the way they're working now and let them continue, it will just double the connivory that they're into, and if we make too much fuss, they'll lock the information up. So either way, we're kind of damned, but the truth will come out, and I think that the evidence here of their manipulations is so flagrant that it'll be a whole new source of young investigators to continue on after the first Warren Commission assault upon truth. We now have this $6 million fiasco. I write to Joe Volz and Nina Totenberg. I have her phone number, and I don't have his, and you can express your opinions. I also have given you a list of the members of the House Select Committee. You can write to all of them, photocopy one letter and send it to each one of them with their name on, or you can write to them individually and express your feelings about this matter. If you have any feelings, just sit down and take the time and do it. It would be appreciated by the researchers who've done so much work. And again, there is a determined effort of a handful of people in this country to set the record straight about the truth. And then there are a lot of people who subscribe to these tapes or buy the books and exposés who just sit back and hope that somebody else will do the work for them. It's not going to happen that way, so just get your own wrist moving and your own paper and pencil and express some of your feelings to this stupid bunch of fools. I don't know where they find these people. I really do not know. As I said here, they're incompetent, uninformed, ignorant to the material available, and on public radio you can hear just how bad they are, and I hope the documents come out so you can read their questions for yourself and not just take my word for it. I think the original critics were right to question the government. I'm proud that I'm among the first 11 in the United States that began my research in November 1963. November 24th, I began, when Lee Harvey Oswald was shot. And it was J. Lee Rankin, the Solicitor General to the United States, who was General Counsel of the Warren Commission, who testified before the House Select Committee, and he said, in quotes, "I'm disappointed about some of the things. I am shocked, very much disappointed about some of the things that have been revealed in recent years." And he admitted that there were things that he didn't know at the time. He isn't vindicated, and he's a liar, and there's documents to show that he was part of the cover-up from the very first day. But now he's saying that information was withheld from them, and he's very disappointed. The fact that we researchers just plowed in and indicated that there were cover-ups and actually forced these people to even to be in a position to say that they were unaware of the shenanigans of J. Edgar Hoover or Alan Dulles is a big admission, just to squeeze that out of them, because just by instinct or whatever you might want to call it, in 1963, there were a handful of us that didn't trust J. Edgar Hoover or Alan Dulles at the time. Nicholas Katzenbach, who was Deputy Attorney General under the Director of the Justice Department, Robert Kennedy, said before the committee, in quotes, "I'm astounded to this day that the former director of the CIA, Alan Dulles, who served on the Warren Commission, didn't at least tell the other commission members of the plot to kill Fidel Castro. Perhaps naively, I thought the appointment of Alan Dulles would ensure that the commission would be told of everything the CIA had in its files." That is Nicholas Katzenbach, now attorney for IBM, that has been a conduit of CIA agents overseas. It was Nicholas Katzenbach who, according to the minutes of the Warren Commission meetings, was ordered by Earl Warren to destroy the body of Lee Harvey Oswald because there was something on that body and the nation couldn't stand another shock. And the orders were to go to Katzenbach, according to the meetings, the minutes of the meetings, January 21st, 1964, before the first witnesses were called. So it's disgusting to call Nicholas Katzenbach in 1978 and have him on the stand and not ask him about the cremation of the remains of a Lee Harvey Oswald, particularly since there were allegations that there were doubles. But they let him on the stand to talk about Alan Dulles being remiss in assisting the original Warren Commission, and they let J. Lee Rankin get on the stand to say that J. Edgar Hoover had held back information from them, making Hoover and Dulles the patsies for the upsurge of a large body of critics that came later, and they, under oath, say that they're shocked and surprised while all the documents and evidence and the questioning of the witnesses before the Warren Commission shows that J. Lee Rankin was part of this conspiracy from the day that he was assigned to the job. Now, the Warren Commission began with their FBI report that Lee Harvey Oswald was guilty, and the original Warren report had a problem. They had to put all the evidence that the FBI collected, and the FBI was the source of the collection of evidence for the Warren Commission, taking it from the Secret Service or the CIA or the Dallas Police Department or the State Department. The FBI collected information and gave it to the Warren Commission. And the FBI had printed a report within 2 days saying that Lee Harvey Oswald was guilty. And the Warren Commission's problem in 1964 was to take all the evidence that would come in until the Warren report was published and try to put that into the bag that Lee Harvey Oswald was guilty. Now, whatever they could distort and put in through perjured testimony and lack of cross-examination, manipulation of physical evidence, they put in. When they had evidence that there was a conspiracy, they just simply ignored it and published it because, as I said on one of the tapes, according to the minutes of the Warren Commission meeting, Alan Dulles said, we may as well print all the evidence because nobody will read it anyway, and if we don't print it, they'll think we covered something up, and that's how we got the 26 volumes. Well, what didn't fit into the Warren Commission conclusions that was bound in one book, they tried to ignore, like you put dirt under the rug when company is coming, or dirty clothes you quick throw into the laundry basket and let them rot and accumulate if you have house guests instead of washing them, or aged food in the icebox that you think it's in the icebox, nobody will see it, and it's decaying and smelling. So all of the report, or the turds of the evidence, I call them turds, that began to stink, the evidence, the actual pieces of information of the conspiracy were bound within the 26 volumes and have been there all along. And they've been ignored, and the Warren Commission just stayed with the story that Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone and ignored that body of evidence. Now, along comes Mr. Blakey, who has a tough job. He's been assigned to cover up for one more time the actual evidence of the conspiracy. New Times Magazine has a description of Robert Blakey. This was September 4th, 1978. Describing him as being on the LEAA, the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968, and he began approving of wiretapping, electronic surveillance. He worked with Richard Nixon setting up the Senate Bill 1, that terrible police state document that was pushed aside, and then a substitute bill was put in, and now they're pushing it aside for another substitute. He worked on his commissions with four people from the actual original Warren Commission: Leon Jaworski, Robert G. Story, Lewis F. Powell, and Nicholas Katzenbach. He knew them intimately, and he also was a defense witness for Mo Dalitz of organized crime when La Costa was suing and has sued Penthouse Magazine for allegations that crime members are involved in that resort down in San Diego. Mo Dalitz, of course, shared housing and intimate contacts with Robert Mayhew, and I've mentioned this, I believe, on other tapes. I don't have to go into William Blakey more, but Chief Counsel G. Robert Blakey had the job now to cling up the other pieces that were left from the original Warren Commission. The Rockefeller Committee was formed to look into domestic CIA activities and assassination plots. They folded quickly when they found too many conspiracies. The job was handed like a hot potato to Representative Pike and the House Committee had the Pike Report, and they closed house fast. Senator Church continued the game, and in came Robert Blakey to cover up because Senator Church closed his investigation. He said, I'm running for president. I have to stop. And he stopped fast. It was in the spring of 76. And Robert Blakey, I believe, was not just replacing Mr. Richard Sprague as the head of this committee, but that they had him like a in the sidelines, like an actress waits as a backup part, to come in and take over the committee when it was necessary, and they could pull out Mr. Sprague, and who wanted a five-year investigation and a complete investigation, Mr. Richard A. Sprague, and they pulled him from the committee and handed it to Robert Blakey. Now, the goal of this committee, of Robert Blakey's, the game plan, is a little bit different than the original Warren report, of course. That was to fit all the evidence into the way that Lee Harvey Oswald killed John Kennedy and killed Officer J.D. Tippit, and Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald for no motive except that he wanted to spare Jacqueline Kennedy the pain of a trial. The goal and game plan of Robert Blakey was this. Number one, to pull enough scientific evidence to support the original Warren Report conclusions, even though he would use NASA and the defense industry agencies that are suspect in the crimes, and we'll go into those later. I want to give you the specific goals that this game plan has used. One, use scientific evidence to support the original Warren Report conclusions. Two, silence the critics of the Warren Commission. Show once and for all that they were misled or unpatriotic or didn't use all the evidence. Three, turn the Gallup poll around. It's necessary to turn the Gallup poll around. 80% of the people in the United States no longer trust the Warren Report, and their goal, according to Mr. Richardson Pryor on Face the Nation, and according to the moderators, I've given you their names in between the programs, they keep saying this will turn the critics around. The figure they've settled on is that 80% of the country didn't believe the Warren Report by 1978, but 80% of the reasonable people in the country will believe it when they're done. The fourth goal of this committee is to put the blame of the critics for being misdirected on two major pieces of evidence. One, a memo that allegedly Lee Harvey Oswald, a letter Lee Harvey Oswald brought to FBI agent James Hostie in the Dallas area prior to the assassination. And the second piece of evidence would be the fact that Alan Dulles did not tell the Warren Commission that the CIA had wanted to kill Fidel Castro. They have turned this around, that these are important pieces of evidence, and later I'll go into detail about those. The Hostie memo would indicate that Lee Harvey Oswald had the potential for violence and that they didn't know that in advance, and that if the CIA wanted to kill Fidel Castro and if he knew about it, the motive could have been vengeance against John Kennedy, and I'll go into more detail about that now. But the fifth conclusion or goal of this game plan of Mr. Blakey is that we now have all the facts available that will come to us unless the KGB turns over their files, that we can't look any further. We did all there was to do. And this is the game plan of Robert Blakey and the Congressional Committee this time around. As I said before, once, to use new scientific evidence to support the original Warren Report conclusions. Two, silence the critics of the Warren Commission. Three, turn the Gallup polls around so the Americans believe in their institutions, their federal institutions. Four, put the blame of the crop of critics on some misdirected information that J. Edgar Hoover and Alan Dulles held back. And five, to allege that there is no more to know. We've done the best we can. We've spent a year, $6 million, and the best investigators available, the best objective minds, and this is the only chance we'll have to know the truth. Now, in order to make that game plan work, and as I say, we'll later go into these point by point, they had to come up with new methods to operate. They have a lot of critics around now, hundreds and thousands, not 100,000, but hundreds of them, or maybe into the thousands. So they have to come up with a new way of working or a new game plan using some of the ways the Warren Commission worked, adding new tricks, ignoring even the own facts that are presented to them, and passing over their own experts. This is the way they could manipulate the story now that there are no Lee Harvey Oswald doubles, and the picture of Oswald in the backyard was indeed taken by Marina. And I'll go into the items that they covered. These were the techniques. Some of the same methods that they used as the Warren Commission included secrecy. They had total secrecy until 17 days of open hearings. There was 1 year of secrecy. They used no critics of the findings of the police or the FBI at the time. Now, the minutes of the Warren Commission have a statement that Mark Lane was looking in information about conspiracy. Joe Jostin was writing a book and had facts. Thomas Buchanan, it was in Paris, was doing a book on the Kennedy conspiracy. They knew that critics were coming along, and they had minutes of the meetings. How will we handle these critics? Well, they decided the way to handle the critics was to call the president of the Associated Press and the president of the United Press to put the critics down. So when the original Warren Commission was done doing their work, they didn't call in the early critics who were investigating material evidence at the time that they were investigating it and compiled their information. If they'd taken the original allegations of Joe Jostin and Mark Lane, and Mark Lane's work was good at that time, you know, his statements in Rush to Judgment at that time were good, and Buchanan's book on Who Killed Kennedy, if they called them in and said, what do you know that the FBI doesn't know, they would have come to different conclusions. But this committee didn't call in the new batch of critics or use the information of the old critics. They worked in secrecy. The major witnesses that could be called were not called before this committee, and they're still alive. There's many that died, but there's some that are still alive, and I'll run down some of those names later. They asked the wrong question of the witnesses on the stand. When they had the right witness on, they asked the wrong question. They changed the subject just as the Warren Commission went off the record. These people just changed the subject if the witness was capable of having information, such as Cyril Weck, an example, was on the stand saying, why do you accept this lone bullet theory? It doesn't hold up scientifically. There was a coup d'etat in this country. They went on to the next question, and even though there was a historian on that committee, a history professor, Representative Floyd Pythian, he never said, what is a coup d'etat? He didn't ask about that, and they just ignored that totally. They didn't want to know what Cyril Weck meant, even though he's a graduate doctor and a lawyer and a responsible member of the community, scientific community and legal community. They ignored that kind of questioning, and they changed the subject. They accepted perjury, two different stories from witnesses, 180-degree differences in what happened, and nobody will be prosecuted. They never accounted for evidence that was missing. They came to conclusions without going into evidence that was missing. Specifically, one of the gross pieces of evidence was the testing of the bullet fragments from the wrist of John Conley, and the fragments found in the car of John Kennedy and John Conley, and trying to put them into that neat, pristine bullet 399. And after they did their lengthy neutron activation test, they were told that J. Edgar Hoover did neutron activation tests of bullet fragments in 1964 that were not only not conclusive, but they were different bullets than these bullets. So they didn't account for missing bullets that would add up more and change the picture. Their questions were all made out in advance, so they couldn't ask anything that wasn't on the list. Therefore, there couldn't be a spontaneous question if a witness came out with a hint of something. Time limits were imposed on their questioning and on the days that they would hear testimony, so they couldn't go into detail. They were not equipped to ask intelligent questions of these particular agents, or were not allowed to, or not prepared to. They hadn't done their homework. And there was no examination of anybody on the stand. I heard between the programs, whether it was Nina or Joe or one of the members of the committee, saying that they used cross-examination. Cross-examination would be to allow members of the AIB who were in the audience or critics of the Warren Commission report who had studied certain witnesses that were on the stand and allow them to ask questions of these witnesses that either they would be held for perjury or give new light to the information. These methods the Warren Commission used, these are the methods the House Select Committee used. There's secrecy, not calling the right people, asking the wrong questions, changing the subject, accepting perjury, not accounting for evidence missing, questions made out in advance, a time limit imposed, no background to ask intelligent questions, no cross-examination by any of the witnesses, by any of the critics to the witnesses. Then they came up with some techniques that were even better than the original Warren Commission. The Warren Commission just planted all its evidence and testimony and let you entangle it for 15 years at your own time and expense. But in order to come up to the conclusions that they're coming up with and they're writing their report now, they had to alter a lot of evidence. And, of course, I've taken massive notes of the incidences where they altered evidence. But the ones that come to my mind now were They had to change the firing time at Lee Harvey Oswald from 2.3 seconds to 1.6. They did away with the fact that there was a scope on the rifle and said he used his bare eye. I don't know by what insight they got that story now, that they could come to that conclusion that the Warren Commission didn't consider it before, particularly since there was somebody at the rifle range asking for a gun with a scope on that was a double Lee Harvey Oswald's. It wasn't, not the rifle range, at the gun shop of Mr. Ryder, asking specifically for a scope. There was a man, allegedly Oswald, but Oswald was in Mexico at the time, talking about telescopic scopes out at the rifle range. A rifle was ordered specifically with a scope on it, but they came to the conclusion that the FBI's efforts in 1964 were wrong, that they could shoot in 1.6 seconds. They also could determine the trajectory by going backwards from the hole in the body up to the buildings, even though one of the experts said that that was impossible and that would be way off, even though they're going to use his name on the final report, and we'll go into that later. They could suddenly take the bullet from the back backwards up to the building and come with these figures. They didn't bother to go into the trajectory of the wrist or the thigh of John Connally. They sort of stopped with the chest, going through John Kennedy's back and coming out his throat into Connally's back and coming out his chest. And they didn't follow the flight pattern all the way from the thigh to the stretcher in the Parkland Hospital. They also still didn't locate the source of bullet 399. They called in these great scientific experts to put all of these matters to rest. And as I say, I'll go into details in each one of these things. But they never bothered to explain that there was no blood on the pristine bullet, that the bullets tested by the neutron activation test were different bullets than the ones tested in 1964, and therefore there are still more particles. And they never attested to the fact that this bullet that was found was on the stretcher of John Connally, was in fact on it. They also had witnesses who testified here before this committee, as they did it before the Warren Commission, that came up with some facts, but that really panicked them, and they didn't know how to handle that. They ignored the testimony of a witness that the bullets that were in Officer Tippett didn't match the pistol that Lee Harvey Oswald was possessing when he was arrested at the theater in Texas. There was this quick running over of this testimony that those bullets didn't match those fragments. They had a witness who testified that the bullets, the shots could come from an area from the Daltex building or the roof of the Texas School Book Depository or the fifth floor, but they ignored that and pinpointed it to the lair of Lee Harvey Oswald up at the sixth floor window, even though the range could include the Daltex building, and he was asked that question and said, yes, it could include that building. They didn't go into the evidence that the gun order from Klein's in Chicago for the rifle of Lee Harvey Oswald could be planted or forged, even though their handwriting witness stated specifically that you can't make a firm handwriting conclusion from a photographed document if you don't have the original source. And they pulled out an original source of Lee Harvey Oswald purchasing some ammunition, but the gun order from Klein's was not hard evidence, and they said that right from the beginning, but they'll come to the conclusion that that was, in fact, Lee Harvey Oswald's gun. And passed over the handwriting experts who were on the stand. They had a man proving that there was no double of Lee Harvey Oswald, that he was in the Marines. His handwriting was on a Marine application form, that he applied for a job in Dallas area, that he applied for a passport, that he had arrest records in New Orleans and arrested in Dallas. But they never pulled out the diary of Lee Harvey Oswald, and they never tested Marina Oswald's handwriting for the name Heidel, which she did in fact use, and which was the name on the gun that was ordered in Chicago. They also called what they called objective scientists, as objective as the original Warren Commission. This time they brought in NASA and the space engineering scientists and the Army scientists, and they announced that their scientists were all objective and they had no particular interest. Of course, they hinted in covering up that they'd use the best objective scientists they could use. Yet one of the gentlemen talking about the bullets and the bullet tests that went through John Kennedy's body and John Connally's body said that when he was through, he wanted to thank the Army for giving him time off to testify. And he, in fact, was the same person who worked on the bullet test for the Warren Commission in 1964. The NASA and space engineering tests of these bullets really are difficult to evaluate because the Defense Industry Security Command and NASA have been charged with being part of the conspiracy to kill John Kennedy by various researchers, and the links have never been discounted. They've been ignored and never been disproven, and the evidence this time went to NASA and space engineering operatives when they, in fact, have much to explain in their role in the Kennedy assassination and in the Martin Luther King assassination also. They also had to come up with the fact that our bodies change 1 to 2 inches in height every day, and that photographic evidence taken at autopsies and passports and in the Army isn't necessarily accurate because the camera could be on a dolly, which moves back and forth and changes shape. I'm not aware that these official organizations use dollies. Even to get a driver's license, there's a set camera and a set place to stand. On the other side of this tape, we'll do some more about the gross errors of the House Select Committee.